everybody would tell me, you just don't have enough experience. You don't have enough experience. And I spent all my time defending my past instead of focusing on the value I knew I could bring. So this allowed me to shift that conversation away from my non-traditional background and more towards what I knew I was capable of doing.
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Visit me on gina-friedrich.com or sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Off we go! Hi, I'm super happy to have you here today listening to my fourth episode of the Make It Your Path podcast. On the show today is Austin Belchuk. He's the director of partner development at Microsoft in New York, but with his experience, his passion and his website cultivatedculture.com, he has helped his clients landing job offers at Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, Twitter and Microsoft, to just name a few. He is a contributing writer at Forbes and Business Insider, with his strategies also being featured in Fast Company, USA Today and The Inc. magazine. Today, Austin shares with us his very personal story, how he has invested so much time and money in becoming a doctor and then it all suddenly slipped away. We hear how he took an upcoming job opportunity without thinking about his future at all and ended up in a position that was miserable and a debt of $10,000 only shortly afterwards. He then decided to move into the tech industry with no professional experience in this field and explains how he was told that he just needs to tweak his CV, his cover letter, and having to apply online at as many companies as possible being the only way to get in. He then shares with us what he did after he sent out about 300 applications in the first 3 months without a single interview, and how he came up with an own new strategy to validate your value for a company, and found himself choosing between job offers from Google, Twitter and Microsoft, which in the end turned out to be the hardest decision he ever had to make. Hello, Austin.
Hey, Gina, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it is really great to have you here. And I would like to start with a question. Who is Austin Belchuk?
That is a very good question. A man of many talents, I guess. No, I'm just kidding. But I am right now, I do two things that take up a decent part of my life. The first is working full-time at Microsoft. I've been here for about 4 years now, and I work on our advertising side of the business. And then outside of that, I run a website called cultivatedculture.com, which is essentially aimed at teaching people how to leverage unconventional job search strategies to land jobs they love in today's market. And I teach people how to do that regardless of their background and experience and without any network or prior connections. And most importantly, I think for me, I teach them how to do it without applying online, because applying online these days for jobs can feel like a bit of a black hole. You don't really have much control over how many jobs get back to you and which types of roles you know you may or may not be qualified for. And so I teach people a way to get around that by building relationships and adding value in a creative way. So I've been doing that for just about 3 years now. And over the past 3 years, I've had my community grow to about 50,000 people.
Wow.
Have come through the doors. Yeah. And many thousands of them have gone on to land jobs at places like Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Salesforce, Facebook, Tesla, Deloitte, ESPN, Amazon, sort of all across the board, any company that you can really think of in different verticals. I think we've had somebody land there, which is amazing. And I've really been focused in on that for the last couple of years. And that's the main thing that I'm hoping to do in the future. So that's a little bit about me professionally and personally. I live in New York City. My wife and I live here, and we've been here for about 6 years now. And I love it because it's international and diverse, and I get to meet so many awesome people. And there's so much opportunity here career-wise. So yeah, I think that's me in a nutshell.
Exciting on many ends. Now you were just talking about what you do with your Cultivated Culture website. Mm-hmm. Considering the overall reason for this podcast being to provide inspiration and motivation for people to identify and follow their own individual path, for some people this actually could mean that following their passion is leading them to a completely new field of work, a new direction, as it did for myself, by the way. I have been working in many diverse areas and industries, and then I jumped into the nonprofit world in between and also had no connections in that field, for example. Mm-hmm. This whole idea you were just talking about was created out of your own experience. So why don't you tell us a bit about your personal journey that brought you to where you are today?
Absolutely. So it really started back in high school here in the U.S. So I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And I think one of the saddest things in today's world is that people are sort of expected to know what they want to do at a very early age. And I think actually the U.S. is a little bit more lenient than some even European countries on this, who, you know, the students take tests and their careers are decided by scores that they get at a young age. But like you said, you know, our interests change and we change as people and we want to do different things. And so I think it's crazy that the system sort of forces us to know what we want so early on, but that's the way it goes. And for me, becoming a doctor or physician was really exciting to me. My parents had many friends who were doctors, and I saw the respect that they got. And anytime I told people I wanted to be a doctor, I got a great response. They were like, oh, great, you know, so smart. Yeah, like very excited for you. And I kind of fed off of that. And so I did everything I possibly could to set myself up to become a doctor. I took all the science classes in high school, and I did internships at medical centers. And then I moved into university here in the U.S. I jumped right into the pre-med track, which is essentially the program or the curriculum that sets you up to go to medical school. And I was so excited. I started my first week. I was ready to go. I was ready to jump into my classes. And then something interesting happened. So in high school, I went to a boarding school, and we were supposed to be on campus all the time. We had study hall at night. We didn't get out much. And I show up on this university campus, and there are all these people from different walks of life and different places, speaking differently, acting differently. There's this social network and sort of like, it was just amazing. And I got caught up in it a little bit. So I went to a few parties and I met a few people and we had a lot of fun, and my studies began to slip a little bit. So I ended up failing biology and chemistry my first semester. I ended up failing French my second semester. And quickly I got myself in a place where my grades would not allow me to go to med school. And that was a really interesting point for me, because I spent so much time prior to that investing in becoming a doctor, investing in going to medical school, and that sort of all slipped away. And it was very hard for me to try to find something else to invest that much time in after sort of feeling such a loss, even though I sort of caused this loss myself. And so I sort of coasted through university for the rest of the time. And I spent a lot of time meeting people and focusing on friends and things like that. But as the end of university sort of came around, I got an internship between my junior and senior years, third and fourth year. And it was given to me by my roommate's father, who just kind of dropped it into my lap. So I was at this internship and they offered me a job at the end of the summer. And I just said yes, because it meant that I didn't have to worry about my career or anything. I just knew I had something set up when I graduated. And I didn't apply anywhere else. I didn't interview anywhere else. I made fun of the people who were studying for interviews and spending all their time in the library trying to get into different jobs. And I didn't think about my future at all. So fast forward to the end of university, when I graduated, I start this job and I move to Charlotte, North Carolina, which is one of the major cities in that area, but not even close to the scale of like a New York. So I show up there and I start my job. I'm making about $35,000 a year, and my apartment alone is eating up about 70% of that. And then my car payment and the insurance on my car took up the other 20%, and I only had about 10% left for me, which was not enough to live on. So I quickly racked up about $10,000 worth of debt in the first 3 months. And on top of that, my job was miserable. My boss was not a nice person at all. He was really degrading. He was always mean to me. I never could do anything right. And if I went above and beyond, he would say it wasn't enough. And it was a really, really toxic environment. And he kept telling me, you know, you're not cut out for this. You don't have a future here. You should do something else. And eventually I said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to go do something else.
How did it feel having the situation, someone else telling you this and you not feeling happy with your overall situation, but then having someone else telling you this? Were you relieved or how did it feel?
It was interesting because for the majority of that time, the advice wasn't like nice advice. It wasn't like from a mentor being like, maybe this isn't right for you. It was more degrading and condescending, like you're too dumb to figure this out and you're never going to be good at this because you're bad and you're stupid and you don't get it. It was more of that tone. So it didn't feel great. And he definitely wasn't going to help me make that move. He was just happy telling me how, you know, bad of an employee I was. So I eventually kind of snapped because everything was miserable. I you know, being in debt and being stressed out about finances, and then, you know, the only way to solve that is to move forward in your career. But now my boss, the one person who can help me do that, is telling me that I have no future here. It was a really, really stressful time.
Quite challenging, I imagine.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I knew I had to make a change. And so in the US here, college is crazy expensive. And, you know, that's one of the big crises facing our economy right now is the student debt crisis. And I think the reason people take on all that debt is because they're told that if you go to college and you graduate, you are basically guaranteed to have a job. You know, you'll have something that allows you to be happy and pay the bills, and you'll at least be able to get your foot in the door somewhere because you have that degree. So that's what I've been told my whole life. And I just assumed that was true. So I said, you know what? No problem. I'll just go into another industry that I'm interested in because my degree will allow me to do that. So this was about the time, this was back in 2013 or so, when Uber was really, really becoming a thing and Facebook was really starting to hit its stride and Google had been the juggernaut it's always been. And I just saw that tech was really the future. All these companies were, people my age were using them and they were really making big waves and I wanted to be a part of that. So I said, you know what, I'll go into tech and I'll be in marketing. And so I went to all the people we typically go to for advice, parents, friends, friends of the family, guidance counselors, career counselors, Google, go online and search for advice. Mm-hmm. And they all told me the same thing. They all said, you know, if you want a job, you have to tweak your resume, you have to tweak your cover letter, and you have to apply online. And it's a numbers game. That was the big thing. Everybody said it was a numbers game. So the more places you applied to, the better chance you had of getting in. So I said, okay, I can do that. So I followed all those steps and I began applying online. And I went straight for the top. I applied to Google, I applied to Apple, and nobody got back to me. So I took it a step back and I applied to like high-end startups and big-name startups, and nobody got back to me. So then I started applying to early-stage startups. And eventually I was applying to places that just had text somewhere written on their website. And nobody would give me a chance, and I couldn't understand why. Within the first 3 to 4 months, I applied to probably about 300 different places, and I didn't get a single interview from one of those applications. The only interviews that I got were sort of pity interviews from family friends, and they would tell me the same thing. They would say, listen, you're a great kid, but you just don't have the same level of experience that all these other applicants do, so we have to go with them. And that was really frustrating because all these people that I've gone to for advice my whole life have told me to do this one thing and it's not working. So I went back to them and I said, guys, there has to be something else. You know, this, you're telling me to do this and I've spent hours and hours and hours over the past couple of months applying and I haven't gotten a single opportunity. What else can I do? And they all still said the same thing, which that was a light bulb moment for me. They all kept saying, well, just keep applying online until something works. And that's when something clicked in my brain and I knew, you know, this process was broken and this couldn't be the only way to go about it. And so I had to figure out a different way. But around that same time, I met with an alumni of my university who worked for Uber, And he told me something. Essentially, it was the best piece of advice I've ever received, which is to only take advice from people who already have what you want. And that was really powerful because I realized that I was taking advice from people who were successful in their own right. You know, my parents were doing well for themselves and my friends had gotten good jobs in finance and all this success was happening for them. But none of them had graduated from college with bad grades. None of them had been in healthcare and none of them had worked at Google or Microsoft or Facebook. So they hadn't been where I wanted to go. And I knew that I needed to go find people who had done that. So I wrote down the criteria for my dream job. I wrote down four things. I wrote down living in a major city like New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles. I wrote down working for a major tech company like a Google or Microsoft or Facebook, making $100,000 annually, and then also being under the age of 26 because I didn't want to wait till I was like 40 for all this stuff to come to fruition.
How old were you at that time?
I was about 21. Mm-hmm. So I had about 5 years to make it happen. I wanted to make it happen as quickly as possible, but I gave myself a bit of a cushion and I went out and I used LinkedIn to find people who met those criteria. I would search for folks who were already working at Google, who were young, who were in these major cities. And I also tried to zone in on people who came from a non-traditional background. So maybe they were originally, they had a different major or they had worked in a different field and then they made their way to these companies at an early age. And I reached out to them and I started talking to them. And there were a couple common threads that came out of those conversations. The first being that every single one of them had gotten a referral into the job. So they didn't apply online. They had somebody pass along their resume. And the second one was many of them found creative ways to illustrate their value. So they didn't just rely on their resume. They didn't just rely on their cover letter to show their value. They went above and beyond to research the company and to understand what the company needs. And they created something that added value against that need.
How did they find out about what the company actually needs or the teams or the programs that are currently running?
That's a great question. And so that's exactly sort of what I built into my strategy. So the way that they did that was researching the companies and having conversations with people. So that's exactly the system that I sort of developed out of this. What I do is I try to first, I picked about 10 to 15 companies that I really wanted to work for. And then I went and did a ton of research. So I was listening to their earnings statements. I was listening to podcasts with leaders at the company. I was reading dozens of articles every day on these companies. And I was just trying to absorb as much info about where they were, where they wanted to go, what challenges they were facing, what their goals were, what the culture was like, anything that I could absorb or soak up, I was doing that. And then I reached out or I tried to find people who were in a position to impact my ability to get hired. So not somebody in HR, not somebody, not a recruiter, but somebody who would actually be in the room where the hiring decision was made. So they could say, listen, we really need Austin on our team. I know him personally. I know the value he can bring to the table. We have to hire him. And so I went out and I worked to build relationships with those people. And during the conversations I had with them, I asked them the same things. I would say, what's the biggest challenge your team is facing? You know, what big initiatives are you guys working on for the next 6 to 12 months? What are your goals? And, you know, what are you hoping to add to your team? And through the research I did and the conversations I had with those people, I learned about the biggest challenges they were having. I learned about the goals they had, and I was able to craft what I call a value validation project, but essentially something similar to what I learned from those other people, basically finding a way to create value that showed I could do the job. Because when I was applying online or when I was interviewing before this, everybody would tell me, you know, you just don't have enough experience. You don't have enough experience. And I spent all my time defending my past instead of focusing on the value I knew I could bring. So this allowed me to shift that conversation away from my non-traditional background and more towards what I knew I was capable of doing. So that system of finding the right people, building relationships with them, and adding value in a creative way eventually led to me getting a job in New York. And then after that, getting job offers from Google, Twitter, and Microsoft. And I obviously accepted the one at Microsoft, and here I am today. So that is a long answer to your question about my story, but that's really where a lot of the strategies that I teach are rooted in. They're from personal experience and they're data driven and they're from stuff that I've tested out with my audience and have seen myself.
What an exciting journey. Thanks for sharing this.
Sure.
You were now saying that you were then trying to figure out how you could add value to the given situation of the company or the team. Mm-hmm. How did you manage to reflect on your own potential and capabilities to really figure out what it is that you can add value to? Because you were quite young, and even if someone is already quite experienced, like myself, for example, so many times in my life, in my work life, I was asking myself, what is it that I'm really good at and where can I really add value? So Austin, how did you really for yourself figure out and define the value that you can add?
It's definitely a great question. And I think a lot of people struggle with that because a lot of people, from what I've seen, they don't do a great job of selling themselves, and self-promotion is sort of a hard thing. But at the end of the day, when you're early on in your career, this kind of stuff is a little bit easier because people don't necessarily expect you to have everything figured out or that robust knowledge of the industry or just business in general. And so you can kind of get away with just putting something together that shows that you're enthusiastic and you took the time to do the research and put something together. As you move further on in your career, it does help to be a bit more specific since you have had that experience and you do know a little bit more about what you're getting into. But it's really more of an art than a science, and it's about getting creative with with the info that you have to work with and the things that you learned and the things that you know that you're good at. So I guess to give a couple of examples, sales is one of the easy places to do this because it's very data driven and there's a very finite goal. But there was a guy named Tristan who wanted to work at Foursquare a couple of years ago, back when Foursquare was really a thing. And he was in graduate school here in the US, and he didn't have a ton of real business experience to speak to because he was in business school. So he saw that Foursquare had a sales job open. And so he went out and he like sort of pitched himself as a supporter of Foursquare. And he went out to all these businesses who would potentially be good advertisers for Foursquare. He researched all of Foursquare's products and he made a pitch to those businesses. And then he emailed the CEO of Foursquare and he said, hey, you have this sales position open. You know, I may not have a ton of on paper experience, but I have 5 or 10 companies here that are ready to sign up for your advertising product. I pitched them all myself and I can do more of this if you're willing to give me the job. And they did. So that's one great example. Another is I had a student, she was going to a college in the Northeastern United States, and she wanted a job at Airbnb and she was a designer. And so instead of just applying online or relying on a resume, she actually went out and she surveyed people. And she also combed through social media feeds to understand what kind of complaints Airbnb's customers had. And she took all of her data and she basically took out the two biggest pain points and she put them into a PowerPoint presentation and she offered up solutions. So the first one was the fact something was up with Airbnb's search that made it hard to search for specific things about a listing. And she screenshotted all these complaints on social media to say, hey, this isn't just me saying this. This is a real issue that customers are complaining about publicly. And here's a mock-up, a design of how I would fix that. And the next one was the fact that people couldn't get in touch with Airbnb's customer service team very easily. So she went out and she did some research and she got a lot of data from reputable sources around the idea of live chat. So having a little widget on the site that you can click and people can immediately interact with support and get the help they need. And she showed the average, you know, lift in customer retention and satisfaction and revenue. And she sent that in and she was called in for an interview the next week. And for me personally, when I was interviewing at Twitter, for example, this was back in 2015, and they were still kind of struggling to monetize. So I came up with 5 solutions that they could implement to monetize their existing audience without having to spend a lot of time, money, or resources on developing anything new. It would be very simple to implement, and I brought that with me. And so it's about understanding what the company needs. You don't have to solve a specific issue right off the bat. I mean, that's really the jackpot. But at the end of the day, what companies are really looking for is for somebody to go above and beyond and show that they did their research and they understand what the company needs and they tie their value into that. Because resumes really focus on our past. And companies have sort of created their own monster here because they've made resumes such a focal point of the hiring process. But at the end of the day, companies don't really care about what you did 2 years ago or 5 years ago, especially if it's in a different industry. What they really care about is what you're going to do after they choose to hire you after they invest a salary in you. And so if you can show them exactly what that looks like through something creative, through something outside of the resume, that's really going to give you an advantage because it's more relevant, but also because everybody else who's applying is still relying on their resume. So you're taking that one step further.
Yeah, great idea. Super creative. That was very inspiring to listen to these examples. I think this is amazing and brilliant if someone really knows what it is they really want. Like knowing this is the job, this is the company, this is what I'm aiming for. You go an extra mile to actually be prepared in such a way to approach a company and then landing an interview. But going one step back, what was it then that really helped you figuring out what it is that you would like to do, that you want from your professional and personal life?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that, because for me, it was very, very clear. I had always been interested in technology, and I'd always been, my life goal is to be an entrepreneur. And I saw all these people who were doing it online. They were great at marketing and they were great at sales, and they were leveraging the internet where tech companies are focused. So for me, it was very easy. But for a lot of people that I talk to, it's not. A lot of people know that they need a change, but they don't know what to do next. And so whenever I'm coaching people or talking to people, the best advice I have is to start small, but just get out there and talk to people who are doing interesting things. So using LinkedIn or just going through your network of friends and going and finding people who are working in positions or at companies that you think are interesting. You're not committing to anything. You can always say no. But just loosely, if what somebody is doing sounds cool, just reaching out to them and saying, hey, I think what you're doing is really interesting. I'd love to learn more about your career path and the types of things that you work on and, you know, where you're hoping to take your career. And just getting them on the phone and having the conversation. And if you rinse and repeat that across different companies and different job titles and different industries, you're going to learn both about what you want to do, but also about what you don't want to do, which is equally as important, because you sort of have to cross things off the list before you find something that you like. So talking to these people will give you a better sense of what their day-to-day looks like and what activities and responsibilities are tied to which job titles. And you can ask them, you can say, you know, I think what you're doing is really interesting. For me personally, I really like this aspect of your job, but I really don't like this other aspect. You know, is there a job or a role out there that focuses more on the stuff I do like? And then maybe they'll say, oh yeah, you know, that's actually this specific role. And now you can go focus in on talking to people in that specific role. And it's a bit of an iterative process. So I typically recommend reaching out to even just one person every day is a great way to go about it. But it's also very helpful. One, it'll help you figure out what you want to do, but it will also get you comfortable with reaching out to strangers and having conversations. And that's a really, really critical part of the job search process as I see it. Because if you're comfortable reaching out to somebody you've never met before, and you're comfortable building a relationship with them, you can really open any doors. I mean, Gina, that's how you and I got connected. And that's how I got the jobs that I'm in today. And that's how so many successful people out there, you know, if you name anybody, Jürgen Klopp or, you know, Elon Musk or anybody else, they didn't start with the connections and the network that they have today. They had to go out and build those connections. And if they only focused on the connections that they had through their friends or through their family, it would be a very slow process. But once they got out of their comfort zone, they learned that, hey, I can send this email to somebody and actually get a response and have a conversation, that really broadened their horizons. So reaching out to people who are doing interesting things, regardless of whether or not you know them, is the best place to start to understand what you want to do. And then on top of that, I'll say you won't know whether or not you're going to like something until you try it. I think there's a lot of talk about passion today. And for me, passion really comes from doing the work and seeing results and being inspired by those results to do more. You know, I would have never, if you asked me 4 years ago, I would have never told you that my entrepreneurial journey or my passion would be helping people with their careers. But because I had a little bit of a spark from some people asking about how I got to Microsoft and I wrote a blog post and it got feedback, here we are. And I would have never known that if I didn't try it. So I always recommend that people do what I call pilots. So just like 30-day stints of, okay, hey, this person told me about this field that's interesting. Let me go take a course on it. Let me read a book about it. Let me go try to implement some of those things in the real world. And then I'll give myself permission. If at the end of 30 days, if I like it, I'll keep going. But if I don't like it, I give myself permission to stop. I give myself permission to move on. You don't need to make a year-long or multi-year commitment to these things. You can really test out a lot of different stuff. And that's how you're going to understand what you like and what you don't like and where you want to go next.
Yeah, by trying it out or by doing a deep dive, by talking to people, I think that's really a super cool approach. I'm just even looking back at my own many, many career changes that I went through, and now people that may be considering a change in their career path. What was driving you throughout this probably not always easy journey until you finally landed an interview?
For me, I really think that I just knew that I deserved more and that I could get there. I just always had this voice in the back of my head that says, you can do it, and you just need to get out there and make it happen and find a way. And just because everybody is doing something, in fact, for me, if I see everybody going and doing the same thing, I tend to take a step back and say, why is everybody doing that? And is there another way that maybe all these people are overlooking? And I think that's very true with applying online as sort of a poster child example. But for me, I just knew that, and I also knew that if I wanted to have the life that I hoped that I would have and that I saw, you know, my parents have and that I sort of dreamed about, I knew that I would have to make some big moves. And when you're young, you also have, you kind of throw caution to the wind and you do things that you may not do later in life. But that was the positive reinforcement. The negative reinforcement was obviously with, you know, racking up debt and my boss not treating me well. I was reminded of that every day when I had to, I worked in healthcare and I had to be in the hospital in the operating room and the procedure started at 6 a.m. And sometimes I had to drive 2 hours to get there. So sometimes I was up at 2:30 in the morning, 3 in the morning to drive 2 hours to get to the hospital on time. And so I'm doing that 3-4 days a week and I'm exhausted and my boss is treating me terribly and I'm racking up debt. And so I think that was the main motivation to get me started. And then with every step of the process, I felt like I learned a little bit more. I figured out something else. So I would say, you know, this thing worked this time, but then this next step didn't work. So how can I figure out more about the next step? And I just sort of turned it into a game. I really wanted to understand how every step of the process worked, what worked well, what didn't work. And viewing it as a game sort of helped me keep the momentum going. And then talking to all these people, again, reaching out and having them say, listen, I was where you are right now. And now I'm at Google, now I'm at Microsoft, and you can do this. You just need to keep pushing in this direction or pushing in this direction and taking this action. And having those conversations was really inspiring because these people had already been where I wanted to go. And I sort of, they gave me hope that it was possible. And so I just kept pushing based off of that.
Was there anything that specifically surprised you throughout that time?
So many things surprised me. I mean, originally the fact that this process that I think the stat right now is about 75% of people rely on online applications as their sole method of applying for jobs. And that is crazy because it's such a broken system. Once I learned that, I was surprised to know that still so many people are kind of running on this hamster wheel that we all know doesn't work and we all get frustrated with. But I would say the biggest thing that surprised me throughout the whole process was how helpful people were once I got over my fear of reaching out. For me, I had read all these articles about people sending cold emails and talking to strangers, but I was honestly terrified because I'm naturally introverted and I sort of taught myself to break out of my shell and seem extroverted and excited and all this, but it takes a lot of energy for me. And at the time I was not the person I am today. So having a conversation with somebody in a coffee shop that I'd never met before was really intimidating, especially if they were working at, you know, a place that I wanted to be. So I didn't send the first email until, you know, one day I just kind of snapped and I was in my car and I was like sobbing and super upset and really frustrated. And finally I said, you know what, I have nothing to lose. I'm going to start sending these emails. And once I pressed send on the first 10 or so, I started with alumni from my college and about 5 of them reached back out and said, yes, I'd love to help. I'd love to talk. And they got on the phone with me. And I think I was surprised at how throughout the whole process, when I was willing to put myself out there and sort of be vulnerable and ask for help, the help was there more often than I ever expected. And I think that that's just sort of part of human nature. And if you are willing to put yourself out there, there is somebody who's willing to grab your hand and kind of help pull you up and pull you forward. So that tends to be one of the biggest sticking points. It was for me, and it tends to be with a lot of the people that come through my audience and the people that I coach. And if I can just get them to start sending those emails and get over that hump or that fear of pressing send, that's really when the floodgates open.
Now, you pressed the button many times back then. What was the hardest decision that you ever had to make throughout this journey, and why?
That's a really good question. I think the hardest decision for me had to be at the very end, and it was choosing which company to go to, because it had always been my dream to work at Google. And throughout my life, when I was younger, you know, I remember when it first came out, I remember the fun, you know, bright colored letters on the screen, and you could search for anything, and my parents were excited, and we really have grown up with it, and it's always been they've always been a constant presence no matter what else has been going on. Their brand is just crazy, crazy powerful. And so for me, that was the pinnacle. That was the ultimate goal. And so I got my interview there in March of, or February of 2015. And I started with a phone screen, and the recruiter originally told me no. And I had to email her back and say, you're wrong, kind of, and sort of finagle my way into another interview. And the process kept going, and they kept telling me, you don't have enough experience. You don't have enough experience. And I met with about 15 different people over the course of about 6 to 7 months, which is an insanely long interview process. And at every step, at every step, they kept telling me I didn't have enough experience.
But still, they brought you to the next round.
They did. I still really don't understand the idea behind it. But every time they told me no, I would come back with something. So I created a pitch deck, and I would say, like, this was the first sales position. I would say, you don't think I can pitch to your customers, but here's how I would pitch to them. And they're like, okay, fine. Like, now we'll have you talk to somebody else. And then I would come up with more ideas, and I would come up with a one sheet, and I would find all these different ways to keep clawing my way forward. And eventually, they ended up giving me a verbal offer. And the way it works at Google is they give you a verbal offer, but then they basically put together a packet of all of your life experiences and what you bring to the table. And it goes to a committee of four Googlers who are totally unrelated to the role. And they're supposed to give an objective view of whether or not you'd be a good fit for Google as a company. And my recruiter, after all of this, my recruiter gave me the verbal offer, and then she called me about a week later, and she said, you know, look, here's the thing. We want to have you on, and the offer is still there, but I'm really worried that the committee is going to turn you down because, you know, of your GPA. And that's what it came down to. She was like, everything else looks okay, but your college GPA from like a year and a half or 2 years ago isn't what we'd hoped it would be. And so I'm worried that the committee will turn you down. And if the committee turns you down and you apply again, you're going to have that like mark on your record. And right around the same time, Microsoft also gave me an offer, and their process was about 4 weeks long. And I actually remember at the beginning of the process, I came home and I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm not really interested in working at Microsoft. And I said to her, if I accept a job at Microsoft, I'll ruin my chances of working at Google forever. Like, they will never want me there in the future.
What made you think that?
I have no idea. It's totally crazy. And I just thought that at the time, you know, this was 4 years ago. So Microsoft stock is now about 4 or 5 times where it was, and Satya Nadella has turned the company around, and that's pure luck that I ended up there through that sort of renaissance. But at the time, Microsoft was still sort of like the old man of the tech companies, and it wasn't cool. And so I thought, you know, if I take a job there, Google's never gonna, you know, they're never gonna want me back. And it's irrational, it doesn't make any sense, and looking back on it, it's crazy. But I told my wife that, and she kind of pushed me to keep going through. And so Microsoft eventually offered me the job, and they gave me a fantastic compensation package. And I was sitting there with a verbal offer from Google and this lady telling me after I'd clawed my way for 7 months that, you know, even now I still may just have to give up my offer because the committee may not like me. And then I had Microsoft offering me this great compensation package and really excited to have me on their team. And so I ended up accepting the job with Microsoft, and that was definitely the hardest decision for me because I sort of had to give up on this dream that I'd had since childhood and I'd been fighting for almost every day, either with Google or mentally with myself, to kind of claw my way through the process. And I sort of had to give up on that. And it actually ended up being the best decision that I ever made. The team here at Microsoft is full of amazing people from all over the world. It's the most diverse team I've ever worked on. The people here on my team were all invited to my wedding, and we didn't have any other coworkers. I really view them as friends first, and I've grown so much here. And I don't think that would have been the case had I been given the offer and accepted the offer at Google, the final offer at least. So it was the hardest decision, but it actually ended up being like one of the most critical of my life.
This really sounds like an exciting and exhausting journey you went through, but now you've arrived and I'm super happy for you.
Thanks so much, Gina. I really appreciate you having me, and I'm wishing you and all the listeners a ton of success.
Thanks a lot, Austin, and also for sharing all this so openly with us and giving us some super interesting insights. All the best to you and take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye, Austin. Ciao. You want to know more about Liverpool's coach Jürgen Klopp and his personal journey? Here is a little sneak peek of the next English episode.
And then when I did what I did, then I realized pretty early that I want to be a football coach, a manager. And it was based on a dream I had from time to time that people realized, when I slept, a real dream, when I slept and I realized, in the dream, people told me, you can't not play football at all. like, wow. And I said, yes, I know. But my answer is, I know. But I love it too much to stop doing it. And so it was, if somebody would have asked me with 25, look, you cannot play football, but you can be the coach of that team, what do you think? I would have said immediately, yes.
Don't want to miss out on this? Sign up for this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Spotify or Android Podcasts. Or visit me on gina-friedrich.com/podcast. Thanks for your time today.